Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have a short interview with an author who hails from the mythical land of Burbank, California, where there are most likely no other writers at all. He is Lucas Aubrey Painter. Back in 2014, Lucas published Outcasts of the Worlds, and he is now releasing its follow-up titled Killers, Traitors, and Runaways. A fan of gray area storytelling and often a devil's advocate, Lucas enjoys consuming stories from a variety of mediums, believing that there's no limit to what form a good narrative can take. And he intrigued me when I first landed at his website. So let's find out more and welcome to the network, Lucas.
Hi, how are you today?
I am good and I'm happy to have you here.
I'm glad to be had.
Okay. Well, now you say that you are a fan of gray area storytelling. What do you mean by that?
I have a bit of an aversion towards black and white just because, you know, a classic good versus evil, you know, narrative can still be fun. I don't want to diminish those. But simultaneously, I feel like the reality of things is that when you make things black and white, you're cutting a lot of things out to, you know, create, you know, a two-dimensional antagonist or, you know, even a two-dimensional hero whose motives are more pure than they might be in reality. So I kind of like that sticky space in between.
I do too, just in life, because it takes away all the choices if it's black and white.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, let's just dig right in. Tell us about your first book titled Outcasts of the Worlds. Just give a little synopsis of that.
I like a lot of genres in general, and the whole thing with Outcasts, not just the single book, but just the saga, you know, the series, whatever that's a part of, is the fact that my heroes, my protagonists, as it were, are traveling literally between different worlds. They, you know, go through these real invisible rifts that the protagonist, Flynn, is able to sense and find his way to, and so they travel through other worlds. And so the fun part of that is it kind of becomes a bit of a genre mashup where I can do something more sci-fi for one arc of chapters and do something more fantasy for the next. And it kind of starts more that way. The blessing and the curse of the first book is I wanted to take my time and set things up. It was actually, this second book is actually supposed to be the back half of the first book. And then I realized how long it was becoming because it was my first book. But the first part of the story is basically them sort of coming away from a terrible place, from this ruined earth, getting free of that, getting free of all the, you know, everything they were, you know, all the, you know, screwed up elements of the world that they were part of. And halfway through the story in the first book, they become part of something bigger. They become, you know, they learn about these orders of gods that sort of dictates all the flows of life and everything, and this particular order that has come to ruin and is going to, you know, basically threaten the end of existence.
Now, you have some mismatched characters that find each other, yes?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Initially, I do have these three. The three initial characters are all in the same prison tower where the story starts. One of my big influences when I was a kid is I liked a lot of superhero stuff, and this isn't a superhero story, but the ideas of characters with powers was something that sort of interested me. So one of the concepts of this, you know, of this post-apocalyptic earth is some people had developed these abilities, and in the effort to sort of regain structural societal stability, the people with these abilities are locked up under somewhat inhumane circumstances in this particular tower. Mm-hmm. The main character, Flynn, falls inside of a sort of an odd space because he looks very monstrous, but animalistic. I think very monstrous is probably overstating. He looks animalistic, but his real acid is more in his mind. He's a manipulator. He learns how to, you know, get in people's heads and, you know, get them to do what he wants them to do. And he uses this, you know, and this is sort of how he gets out of this tower, you know, this prison tower, but it's also the person he doesn't want to be anymore.
Sounds like you had fun with this.
Yeah. I've actually, like, I didn't get a whole lot of criticism for the first book just because I didn't make a huge splash with it, but usually a net positive was everyone liked my characters, and especially I saw some people say they really liked Flynn in particular just because I try to write it so that his motivations are never entirely pure,
mm-hmm.
That he always has something to gain from anything he's doing. So even if it seems like he's trying to be altruistic, he probably isn't.
just a little bit of something in the background, right?
Yeah. It's like, and it gets almost unnervingly easy to make it that he always has something to gain from any circumstance, even when he's trying to do the right thing.
I think we might know some people like that.
Yeah.
Then your newest release, Killers, Traitors, and Runaways, when was that out?
It's coming out, hold on, let me just check the exact date here. I believe it should be October 23rd.
That's what I thought, pretty soon, right?
Yeah. I've actually had it done for a while, but there were just some things in the background that dragged on much longer than I would have liked as far as actually, you know, getting it out, and I finally decided to bite the bullet a little bit ago and just, you know, get it through.
Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of a continuation, then, of the first book.
Yeah, it is. It'll pick up a few months after the first book's climax. Okay. And sort of finds the characters in a bit of a different space. Because the thing is, I sort of set up the core objectives for the immediate story by the end of the first book, and so I can get that stuff going right away in the second one as opposed to taking my time like it did with book one. But now I have this notion that the characters know what they have to do, but because they're in this one world out of many, they're going through these many worlds, they don't really know how to get where they need to get. And so I sort of start out with everyone a bit lost, both in terms of their interpersonal relationships to varying degrees, and then also in their very literal circumstances.
Are they ever going to find their way, or is this going to morph into a third book?
Oh, there's more story going on, but this book does resolve the immediate quandaries that were the immediate obstacles that were set to be overcome in the last one.
Okay.
I don't want to stay in one space for too long.
No, I get that. And speaking of that, then where do you find your inspiration for these plots and people? I know you mentioned superheroes, but is there more?
I mean, the superhero stuff is pretty generous nowadays. It just was some of the foundation, because some of these characters I've had for a very long time. And so it was more the foundation for some of them. And even then, they moved very far away from those roots. So I'm almost embarrassed to bring that up on principle. As far as where I get the inspiration from, some of it just kind of comes along with the characters and the conflicts. It's like, what do I want the characters to go through? Where do I want them to end up? And usually the circumstances will end up morphing about that. As far as the thematic elements, that's a little trickier to state, just because I think some of it just, you know, comes back to these core ideals that I have. There's a particular sort of a viewpoint I came across in, like, you know, in the last several years that kind of has been my guiding star for this whole thing, is that I'm wary about self-proclaimed good people. And it probably sounds a bit odd, but, and I don't mean that I don't trust people who are good or, you know, whatever, but people who say they're good tend to give themselves a lot of moral license and will often do some pretty bad things, you know, with the best of intentions. But I find those are the people who are more likely to cause harm, because you will tend to lose consideration for the other side when they think their side is right.
I absolutely get that. It's, you know, you go back to methinks he or she protests too loudly. You know, when somebody has to come right out and tell you who or what they are, yeah, I think there is a question behind that. I don't think that's a very far-fetched notion.
Yeah.
So I'm in
this. So in this case, like, and I use this as a setup point for the second book. The prologue is literally titled All Good People, and it was sort of meant to set the tone for the story.
Got it. When you're putting this together, is the plot more in your mind, or is it the character? Is it the people that try to then find the plot? How does that work for you?
The characters have thus far been my big focus point, but I generally, as a rule, I try to know where the story is going to end, but then I usually am trying to figure things out in the middle. Like, I'm working on my third one right now, and I've got the main story arc, but I also have a subplot running along with a different character from the main group, and I know where that character is going to end up, but I'm actually in the process of sitting down right now and plotting where she goes from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. To sort of, you know, figure out where I end up in, you know, where that space ends.
I always find character development to be very interesting, because it's different for a lot of people. Some people actually have a questionnaire with 100 questions that they fill out, and they know exactly what formula they're going to stick with. And there's others that just let these people take off on their own. Where do you find yourself?
I don't have as detailed of a bio for anyone as I would like to. I would like to have all those details in stone, but it gives me a little bit of wiggle room when I don't. In some regards, the main thing for me is I figure out the character's voice, and I mean, like, literally, I am sitting in my, you know, office alone writing, and I will sometimes read things out loud in what I believe to be the character's voice to figure out if this is something they would say. And usually that actually helps me out pretty well.
Let's hope strangers don't pass by your room and think, okay, what's Lucas doing now, right?
That's why I prefer to write when no one else is home.
I love it. How do you go about then selecting the names of your characters? Where do they come from?
Honestly, that's kind of a thing where I just sound things out until I figure out what sounds interesting. It's not a terribly clever process. I just sort of try to find something that is going to be alien but can still sound like a name. Some of these characters that I've had for a longer time had more naturalistic, like, you know, Earth-ish names, as it were, and I still sometimes use a medley of stuff that would be from our world for characters from other worlds, just because I don't think it's inconceivable, for example, that John could be a name that an alien race would use as well and might even spell the same way if we were to translate the phonetics literally or whatever. But some of the characters that, you know, had Earth-like names, I started doing sound-alike names. Like, in particular, there's a character in that shows up in the first book that continues on the second book named Chariska. And the root name back a while, like a few years ago, was Jessica, but when I want to give her a more interesting sound, I worked for something that sounded like so it would still feel like the character to me. And there's a few characters I did that with. There's another character named Zaja. She was always Zaja. That was just one that sort of came to me like years ago on incident.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like those names. Very good. Chariska and Zaja?
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. So as you're writing your books, you're obviously not writing normal reality. You know, you're in your headspace and you're getting out into other places. What have you learned about yourself that you didn't know?
There was one, and it was really funny because I'm sort of the kind of person that has, you know, had long taken the notion that you learn something about yourself through writing. And I don't normally think I would have had that happen much, but there was one case where it did happen, and it actually happened right near the end of the first book. I actually want to find it. Okay, so it was about Flynn, and I think that was probably fitting since he's the character I'm still... I do a lot of point of view stuff where it's like third person, but I follow different characters, but Flynn being the protagonist is still the person I spend the most time on. I had this particular line about Flynn, and I realized it kind of reflected on me to a point. It fits more him as a con man, but it says, he had survived as long as he had by seeming ordinary and mundane, by not letting society categorize him and put him away. For as long as he could manage, he never wanted an identity foisted upon him. And I think that was sort of something like, you know, I kind of actually realized that is something I do relate to. I don't like being quantified too much. I don't like having too many labels or anything else because that gives me less flexibility to be who I need to be or who I am.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked you that question because I really enjoy that answer. Thank you for sharing. That's kind of personal, but thank you.
Of course, thank you.
Yes. And so then, you know, obviously you're growing as a writer, and what are your hopes for your books? What do you want your readers to feel or take away?
I mean, the bare minimum is I'd like people to enjoy them. I think there's always a risk when you ask someone to take things away from it because then that ascribes a specific value to it, but at the very least, I like people just to enjoy it and engage it. I would like to, you know, see more success and, you know, see the series grow and continue on because I'd like to be able to do it for a living if I could.
Right.
Since I have a few more books, you know, lined up before the story is going to be done, to be sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's just the point is just get it out there, and that's what we're trying to do with you today. So we'll just keep doing what you're doing, keep writing, and you will find the success that you're looking for. Publishing, let's just briefly touch on your publishing process. How did that move for you?
Terribly. I just try to get picked up by literary agent pick up my work, but I learned a lot of things along the way that meant it was going to be probably impossible, at least at this point in time. One is just that what I'd written was too damn long. And this is keeping in mind that this second book, it was originally going to be the second half of the first book.
Right.
So the thing I sort of learned is that they don't tend to pick up new authors, unless they're doing like something that's maybe half the length of what I wrote.
Right.
So there was that. Second of all, and I didn't go through my editing process till a little bit later on, but my first drafts were a lot more coarse than I would have liked. Like when I wrote book two, the editing process was much smoother simply because I knew how to, I knew better how to format things and how to approach things, and I'd also more clearly defined my voice. I had written the first chapter of book one to all hell. I had like revised that and rewritten it so many times it was comedic.
Well, I guess that's the point. I mean, you are learning and growing as a writer as well, so that's to be expected. So you say you're working on the third book?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's next after that? Any other future plans?
I'm just focusing on this series for now. I mean, the thing is, it was originally going to be three books, and while I don't have it meticulously planned out, I do know where it's going to go, and I think it's you know, when I had to break up the first book, I was like, well, I'm going to have to break up all these, so I'm assuming it'll end up between 5 or 6 books, maybe a hair more, but I can't see it going past that.
Okay. All right. Well, we're just going to have to keep an eye on you then. Well, we've talked about many things in a short amount of time, but is there anything we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
I don't have anything at mind, no.
All right. Well, you're easy. So where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
There's already a listing for the paperback for Killers, Traitors, and Runaways on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. I'll have the digital version added there for pre-order as well pretty soon. For my personal information, it's just lucaspainter.com, LucasPayenter.com.
All righty, lucaspainter.com. Well, any final words, Lucas, before we say goodbye?
Just thank you for having me. This is fun and interesting to do for my first time.
I think you did very well. I really enjoyed talking with you, and I would love to do this again with you some other time when you have your future books come out. So again, thank you for sharing with us today.
All right, thank you.